Well, it was quite a thrill, first of all, to get the call. I was excited about being considered, and you know, when you get a call where you're being recognized by your peers as one of the best, it's exciting. It's humbling. A lot of looking back on my life and thinking about all the different people that had an effect on not just my life, but particularly with basketball. It can get a little overwhelming.
Well, a lot of times it's that early foundation that lays the groundwork for success. And as we stand here on the Illinois Wesleyan University campus, we're going back a few years, but how did your time here, your 4 years in Bloomington, mold you into first the basketball player that you became, but the man that you became?
Well, I had a great 4 years here at Wesleyan. You know, I grew up in St. Anne, and our basketball team had some success there, and going through the recruiting process, Coach Bridges had a huge impact on my life. I made a commitment here and trusted Coach, who just said, "Jack, I don't know how good you can be, but we're going to find out if you're willing to put in the work, and I'll make that commitment to you that I'll do whatever I can to help you achieve your goals." And that's what worked out. I mean, I got a chance to play right away. We were very competitive. I developed my game here. The inside pivot came about because Coach recommended that I build a go-to move in the post, and you know, it became the foundation of my offensive game. And so again, huge impact on my basketball career. And again, like I said, my 4 years here were great 4 years, made a lot of lifelong friends, and have fond memories.
And that became a patented move, sort of your signature move that became your trademark in the NBA.
Yes. Again, I was a skinny kid. Even here, I was still, I don't think in my sophomore year I was 200 pounds, but I was 6'10", 6'11", and I needed to find something which was effective in the post where it wasn't necessarily a power move, but a move that fit my skill set. And so we worked hard at trying different things, and the inside pivot is what came about. It gave me some room to get my shot off. I was a decent shooter for a big guy, and it fit my game really well, and it really put some pressure on the defensive player. They had to decide whether they were going to get into me and crowd me, or in which I'd put the ball on the floor and go around them, or if they didn't, I shot over them.
Now, you're still involved in the game as a part-time consultant with the Toronto Raptors. The game has changed quite a bit since you were playing a few decades ago. It seems as if the role of the big man has been minimized to some extent, at least on some teams. There's so much emphasis on the three-point shot. Everyone wants to be Steph Curry now. Does that affect how you coach and teach the game and in the way it's played now?
I agree. I mean, the game has changed. I think bigs have to be more skilled. They just can't depend on power. And a little bit has to do with the way the rules have changed. Also, teams have just decided that you know, they're not going to let anybody be comfortable in the post. So if you're trying to play with your back to the basket, they're going to come and double team or come in and jam you up a little bit. Hence, there's more the big has to face up, which nowadays that's what I did years ago. I played the game from a face-up position offensively. So there's a lot of correlation there, which I work with guys and mentor them talk about different situations, which I've had experience with. And then, of course, they want the game more free-flowing and open, open court. And so bigs have to, nowadays, if they can, they have to build their game with some range, where now you see a lot more bigs working on shooting three-pointers because it's usually their man that's helping the other people on the court, so you're going to get a lot of good looks at the basket.
How would a player like you, the 1970s version of Jack Sigma, fared in today's game?
Well, I think part of the success of any player in pro sports is finding a way to reach the level of competition. And, you know, I'm confident that I would have been able to make adjustments or whatever to be a factor in the game today. But I'm not trying to tell you that the game isn't, the athletes aren't bigger, faster, stronger. They are nowadays. And the science behind the game and recovery and strength and conditioning and all of that is much improved. And the athlete's been studied, you know, by everyone in every sport. And there's a lot of cross coordination on how to build these athletes. So the game continues to get better, but I think anyone from the past would tell you that we'd find a way to compete and still get there.
And this is Sound Ideas. I'm Eric Stock with Jack Sigma, Illinois Wesleyan alum and a soon-to-be Basketball Hall of Famer, who will be speaking at the YMCA Legacy Dinner on Thursday night at the Bloomington Country Club. When you were young, growing up, was there a YMCA that you were a part of that you recall, or did you have a relationship with the YMCA when you were young?
I did not when I was younger. Again, I grew up in a farm town, and I think the closest YMCA was probably in Kankakee. But I did have a relationship with the YMCA when I was with the Supersonics, and it was really a relationship between the NBA and the YMCA, in which every year, I think two or three times a year, the players would go to a YMCA in the area and speak with the kids and do a little basketball clinic. And so had an opportunity to be involved. And again, I know the good work of the YMCA, and so I'm looking forward to the event on Thursday night and looking forward to sharing some of my experiences with the crowd, and hopefully they'll enjoy it.
Youth sports is so much more structured now than it was when you were growing up, and even when I was growing up. Is that a good thing?
In some ways it's a good thing, and I still hope that kids learn how to just get together and kind of put their games together. I think there's a benefit to that too, where they have to, you know, be organized and take some leadership and just have some fun, where it's not necessarily always keeping score, but just going out and enjoy it among their friends.
Shifting to college athletics, it's also a different scene than it was when you were in college. It seems to be much more of a big business now. It's hyper-competitive. There's a lot of money in it. If you were in charge, how would you do things differently, or anything that you would like to see differently about the college game?
You know, there's a lot of people that are really smart that are involved in it. Again, the reason is, again, it starts with the exposure. There's a lot of space filled in media at a bunch of different levels. And again, the whole explosion of from streaming Twitters to whatever, everybody can kind of have a comment on it, and that space is a big space to fill. Again, that kind of just feeds on itself. There's issues. You know, it's not perfect. The money definitely is huge, but it's not totally broken. You know, and like I said, I'm not in tune with it enough, other than being a fan, and I have my thoughts, but there's good people running that.
And going back to the NBA, 2 years removed from Illinois Wesleyan, you win an NBA championship with the Supersonics. 40 years later, you're part of a championship team on a more limited role, of course, as a consultant with the Toronto Raptors. So what was that like?
It's been really a great year. You know, there was some changes with the Raptors. They've had we've had some success over the last few years, but when it came to the playoffs, we ran into LeBron a few years and just couldn't get over the hump. The whole acquisition of Kawhi Leonard has kind of changed, I don't know, the approach and what was maybe achievable. He had an unbelievable playoff run. And, you know, Canada, the whole country of Canada and the Toronto area was just crazy for the Raptors. And there was a lot of big moments in a number of different games that the Raptors were able to come through and win it and win series after series. And that's where my memories of 40 years ago was always a play here or there that made a difference in these games. And you just got to be focused. And I'm happy for our guys. It's well-deserved. They were very determined and focused all year long, and they believed they could get it done, and they did.
One thing that was unique about Kawhi Leonard is the team deliberately sat him off and on for about a fourth of the games of the season. He wasn't hurt, recovering from an injury the year prior, but they had a new term for it, in fact, load management. And I think not everyone was sure how that would play out, but he was rested and was clearly the best player in the playoffs, leading his team to a title. Do you think more teams are going to kind of follow that lead maybe and sit their stars for significant portions of the season so they're ready for the playoffs?
Well, I'm sure that'll be considered. And the league has to take a look at, you know, if they want the best players out there playing at their highest level, there's some consideration there. The one thing about Kawhi, though, too, was he was coming off a season where he didn't play at all. I think he was part of 8 or 9 games. So just transitioning back, particularly early in the year, it was important for him to feel good about his body, have confidence in his body. And so hence they tweaked the load in which he had to carry. As the final month of the season came around, though, and knowing with the playoffs coming, and there's never any back-to-backs in the playoffs, he started to gear up for that type of load. So by the time he got to the playoffs, I think he was used to playing three games a week, 4 games a week, which is what the playoffs dictate. And like I said, it wasn't just the load management. He just had a heck of a run in the playoffs.
Is that one way the game has changed? Back in the day, there was sort of a mindset where you didn't take that time off. If you could play 48 minutes, you played 48 minutes, and you just grinded it out through the season. Has that philosophy changed at all in the game?
Well, I think, like I said earlier, the science behind the game is so much better. And they've you know, got the monitors in which they can tell how much load is on your body and stress and how good a recovery you can make. And, you know, guys get tip over from the amount of use they put on their body, and then that recovery is longer. So I think you see it as far as the amount of minutes guys play and making sure that they get rest. I remember when I was young, you know, there's many times we were in a close game and I played the whole half. You know, you don't see that much anymore, maybe in the big playoff games in the second half. But a lot has to do with just discovery of how the body works. And there's some, you know, there may be some short-term gain for a specific instance, but long-term, you pay a price for it.
Here with Jack Sigma, who is soon to be inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame. Have you written your speech yet?
I have not, but I've got on my phone, I've got a place in which I write thoughts down in. And I'm also on YouTube. Fortunately, you can go and listen to some of the other guys' speech. And I think the important thing right now is just to kind of get a little bit of an organization as far as what points you want to hit and talk about and what's important to you. But it'll come. And the Hall of Fame has done a wonderful job. The people there know that it's a huge thing for an inductee, and they provide so much support. And I'm probably, maybe after the 4th of July is when I'm going to tackle it. And the Hall wants you to, they put a goal down. I think it's the middle of August. They want you to have your speech done so you don't have to worry about it. You know, you don't need any more pressure. So it'll get done.
You'd referenced the low post moves that you are known for. You're also known for your long, curly hair. If you haven't seen it, you can YouTube it. But what do you want to be remembered for?
I want to be remembered for my durability and my ability to do a number of things on the court. And I played in an era where there was a lot of great centers, and a lot of them in the Hall of Fame. And I appreciate the opportunity to compete against such great players at the highest level, and it made me a better player because of it. So I was, at the time, it was a huge challenge, but I feel real fortunate to have had a chance to play against the greats.
Want to drop some names? Who were the toughest to play against in your era?
Well, Kareem, Moses, Artis Gilmore's in the Hall. Robert Parrish is in the Hall. Bob Lanier is in the Hall. Later in my career, you got Patrick Ewing and Hakeem Olajuwon and David Robinson. I played against Walton. There's just Dan Issel. There's just a huge number of guys that I had to square off with night in and night out that are there in the Hall.
And lastly, what's next for you? You're still involved with the game as a consultant. Anything else on the horizon for you, basketball-wise or otherwise?
My goal is to stay connected with the game. I don't necessarily want to do it full-time, but I haven't ruled that out either. We'll see. I need a little structure in my life, but I don't need full time. We have a son that plays over in Europe. We always like to get over there and a couple times a year watch him play and spend some time with him. Got a lot of friends I get out and play golf a couple times a week and enjoy that. So have some freedom, but still stay connected to the game in some manner is my goal.